Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art is hosting a most unusual exhibit this fall of contemporary fashion design by Native American designers. Native Fashion Now is organized by the Peabody Essex Museum in Massachusetts and examines the artistic achievement of Native American fashion designers from the 1950s all the way through contemporary creations today, with an emphasis on the latter. Through the designers' creations, you get an understanding of the designers' heritage and their contemporary worldview. Northwestern Indians feature the iconography of totems and stylized eagle imagery. Plains Indians, by contrast, use the symbols of the horse and the buffalo, but all use this imagery in an utterly contemporary way, which range from provocative haute couture dresses and suits to inlaid jewelry, beaded high fashion stiletto heel boots, to politically oriented t-shirts and accessories like purses, glasses, bracelets, and necklaces. My guest today is Christina Burke, Philbrook's curator of Native American and non-Western art, who with her team has created a fashion show look for the exhibit in the Helmert Gallery at Philbrook. Native Fashion Now is on display at Philbrook through January 8th, and Christina Burke is my guest today to preview the exhibition. Christina Burke, always a pleasure to have you back. Welcome to Studio Tulsa.
Thank you for having me.
This new exhibit, Native Fashion Now at Philbrook, museums are starting to focus on fashion designers. I know there was an Yves Saint Laurent show in New York at one of the major museums, and a lot of people are saying, is this the sort of thing that museums should do? What went into the decision-making in presenting this particular exhibit at Philbrook?
We thought this was an exciting opportunity to expand our visitors' experience with Native art and design. So Philbrook has an incredible collection of Native American art, pottery, basketry, paintings, jewelry. But this show really has very contemporary works by designers whose creations are now seen on runways in New York and Paris and on things like Project Runway on cable television.
Now, of course, the controversy comes in because these are big commercial designers getting shows at museums. And these are not major commercial designers, although they do commercial work. They're more of an artsy sort of very small team of designers working to create product.
Yes, although some of them have been collaborating with major designers. So, for instance, Virgil Ortiz, who's from Cochiti Pueblo in New Mexico, collaborated with Donna Karen to make a line of clothing, and one of their dresses is in the exhibition.
So, give us a sense of overarching view of the show. Is it just looking at where Native fashion designers are working today, or is it a history, or what exactly?
It's very contemporary. Most of the works in this exhibition are from the past, really 3 or 4 years. There are a couple of pieces in the first section that are from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, the section called Pathbreakers, looking at the work of people like Lloyd Kivenew and Frankie Welch, who were paving the way for today's contemporary designers.
You mentioned Lloyd Kivenew. Lloyd New is his name, I guess. And,
yes.
And he went by Lloyd Kiva, right?
Well, Lloyd Kivenew, he used all three.
Yeah.
He was a Cherokee artist from here in Oklahoma, actually, but lived most of his adult life in the Southwest, in the Phoenix area, and then really mostly in Santa Fe. He was an early designer and really, I think, was the first Native designer to work in clothing and accessories, et cetera. He was also an early leader of the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, and this is actually the centennial of his birth. So there are several exhibitions celebrating his life and influence in and around Santa Fe.
Now, as you well know, as a curator of Native American art, that when you start looking at traditional Native American arts, there's this sort of divide between the contemporary and the traditional. Is the same true when it comes to fashion design or clothing design?
I think it's a lot of gray areas, and you'll see that throughout this exhibition. So even in very contemporary works, things like by Dorothy Grant, who's Haida from the Northwest Coast, she incorporates these traditional Northwest Coast designs that we would see carved into totem poles, for instance, or carved into masks from that area, but she incorporates them in her fabric.
And in this case, a more like a cocktail dress.
Cocktail dress? Well, actually, a ball gown.
Yeah, a ball gown.
And tuxedo. Uh-huh. So there are both men's and women's fashions in this exhibition.
Yeah. Well, when you talked about somebody like Lloyd Kivenew, You have some of his most iconic dresses from the late 50s, early 60s, 70s era.
This exhibition does have two of his dresses from that era. And one of the things that's important about him and his work is that he really helped to make Native design mainstream. So dresses like these would be seen in high-end department stores in L.A. and Denver and even New York City.
And to talk about them a little bit, the dresses that are featured, they use these sort of a shimmering color design where it's sort of, it's almost like a, I don't want to say tie-dyed, but it's...
Hand-dyed.
Hand-dyed, yes. Hand-dyed. Yeah. So it has this mix of colors, but in the background there'll be like grazing horses or some other Native American iconography in the back, just very subtle.
Exactly. So one of the dresses, as you mentioned, has these horses sort of galloping across a landscape. And the other uses traditional Navajo imagery of yay or holy people that we'll often see woven into Navajo weavings, for instance. But here he's used that imagery from the Navajo of the Southwest and incorporated it into these beautiful cocktail dresses.
Now, you mentioned Frankie Welch as well, another Cherokee who perhaps in the late 60s and early 70s was, at least in Washington, a major power force. She's designing dresses for high government officials, for first ladies, in the case of President Ford's wife.
Exactly. So she lives in the D.C. area, and in the 70s, 80s, was designing for all kinds of folks. And so one of the pieces in this Pathbreakers section is a dress that she designed for First Lady Betty Ford.
What's really interesting is this has been on display at the Smithsonian, this dress before. And when you first look at it, you would think it's more Asian influence than Native American influence, because it has a very Asian lines to the dress.
Yes, the cut of the dress and the silk embroidery, so the materials, the cut, and the design are certainly Asian influenced, and you see all kinds of influences throughout this exhibition. And I think that really underscores the fact that Native people do not live in isolation. They're very much a part of mainstream culture and the international, not only market, but aesthetics and these influences and inspirations from literally around the world.
Now, there's also that dress, and there's also this Cherokee syllabary scarf, which I guess she designed for the Secretary of State, Dean Rusk's wife.
Exactly. So another piece by Frankie Welch has the Cherokee syllabary on it, and it's from the 1970s, I believe. And this is the Cherokee syllabary was invented by Sequoyah in the 1830s. And is still very much in use today. In fact, a number of Cherokee artists and Cherokee Nation are incorporating it into operating systems so that people who know the language can post on Facebook using the Cherokee syllabary and text each other and write research papers, etc., using that syllabary created by Sequoyah in the 1830s.
Was that a sort of a groundbreaking piece of material to put that in there, especially when you think of the time, you know, the early 1970s, you're beginning to see this awakening of Native American rights and American Indian movement and all this. Was that a sort of a controversial scarf when it was created?
I don't know about controversial, but I certainly think it was groundbreaking and incredibly important. As you said, the 1970s was a time of civil rights in terms of Native rights and federal regulations about Native American rights, the Indian Religious Freedom Act, for instance, and others. But we also see that pride in Native language carry on to today. So there's a piece by a Canadian Cree artist, Derek, and I can't pronounce his last name, but he uses the Cree syllabary in a piece by his. And the words in the Cree syllabary are, "We will succeed." So he's using this Native syllabary, this Native language, as a design element to speak to Native pride today in the 21st century.
And I understand that's a bit more of a political piece of art, because the Canadian government has been trying to get the Cree people to not speak their language at some points.
Well, unfortunately, that was part of colonial history in both the United States and Canada to suppress Native languages. But again, since the 1970s and certainly now in the 21st century, a lot of tribes are looking to Native language as an important and really a critical way to continue their traditions in art, in religion, in political issues. So
Now, another one of the early, I guess, path breakers, although it's not all that early, is Orlando Doogie, who has the cover design, this amazing, amazing sort of couture dress.
Orlando Doogie is a very, is a really creative designer whose works are seen on runways in New York. And he hand dyes this silk and actually collaborated on this piece with the feathered cape is actually by a Cherokee artist, Lisa Rutherford, who lives down in Tahlequah. But he, although he was inspired by traditional arts of his Navajo grandmother, he's also inspired by couture designers like Yves Saint Laurent and others. And again, drawing on both of those traditions, if you will, to make his own statement in the 21st century.
Yeah. Now, one of the very first items you mentioned, the Project Runway, and that's Patricia Michaels from the Taos Pueblo. And her dress that you mentioned was a winner on Project Runway. Actually, it sort of combines techniques because they were asked to do a dress that was inspired by the New York skyline. And she does this dress with almost a little shift dress. And yet the way she made the design was using traditional techniques, right?
Yes. And she really is a master at using these ethereal materials in her designs, not only the dress, but these wonderful parasols that she designed that we have suspended in the lobby above the entrance to the gallery and sort of welcome people into this experience of Native fashion now.
My guest today is Christina Burke, the curator of Native American and non-Western art at the Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook presents Native Fashion Now. It's on display at the museum through January 8th. Now, the second section of the show is a section called Revisitors, and I assume it's designers that are using more traditional elements. And I'm looking at a pair of stiletto boots, but they're using traditional beadwork right here. And this is by Jamie Okuma, and it's a beautiful, beautiful pair of boots because there's like flycatchers, beautiful flycatcher birds on the top, and a lot of sort of icons that we would expect with Native American design at the bottom part of the boot.
With Jamie's boots are a great example of the revisitor section where these artists and designers are, as you say, drawing on these traditions, but really pushing them forward. So these boots are Christian Louboutin boots with the iconic red sole. So very exclusive, luxurious boots that she has made even more exclusive by hand beading these beautiful designs of swallows and abstract floral designs on. And, you know, these boots are iconic for a couple of reasons. Adorning clothing and footwear, shall we say, with glass beads has become traditional in Native art. But those glass beads, when they were introduced by non-Native people, were new and contemporary. Native people had been making beads out of shell and other materials for generations, decades, eons, millennia. But with the introduction of glass beads that were mass-produced in places like Eastern Europe, here was a new material. And so those beaded moccasins that we often think of as being traditional Native art, they were contemporary back in the day. And so Jamie is drawing on that tradition, but again, bringing it into the 21st century with these Christian Louboutin boots and the beautiful antique beads that she has hand-stitched onto them.
I'm also looking at bracelets, which are, again, that's a very traditional piece of Native American jewelry, and yet these are utterly contemporary.
They are very abstract inlay of various kinds of not only stone but also shell. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see a mix of media and very abstract design in small form. These are really small sculptures. They're not just jewelry. I see them as small sculptures.
Yeah. Another one, what an interesting thing. It's called the Indian Parade Umbrella. And again, it's using, it looks like a beadwork along the outside of the umbrella. And it's just very different. I mean, it is, I guess, the design is like a parade out in the West somewhere.
Exactly. So the designer is Terry Greaves, who's Kiowa, originally from here in Oklahoma, although she lives in Santa Fe. And she's really, that piece has multiple layers. So it is an umbrella, but it's made of tanned hide. And she's decorated that hide with beadwork, of images of Native people dressed up in their finery for parade at Crow Indian Fair, which is the largest gathering of Native people every August up on the Crow Reservation in Montana. And, you know, umbrellas, although they may seem like a sort of an everyday object to us now, but when they were first introduced to Native people, these were really luxury items. Not everybody had them. They're sort of a status symbol. But very practical, too. If you've ever been out in a parade, either in Montana or here in Oklahoma in August, it's pretty hot. And so having those umbrellas to shade you from the sun beating down on you was practical, as well as a status symbol.
You know, earlier we were talking about cultures melding together, and what I'm looking at now is another excellent example. And this is by Toni Williams, who's a Northern Arapaho, and she does a kimono, but it's completely with almost very stylized 19th century imagery of, say, Native Americans, some buffalo, but in unusual colors. It's almost like a 60s, 70s sort of view of these traditional icon pieces.
Yeah, Toni Williams' kimono is another great example of the mixing of blending of cultures. So it's a Japanese kimono and obi, the traditional belt that wraps the kimono. But the images are from traditional plains pictography. So images of humans and animals that we often see painted on hide, on cloth, or on the pages of ledger books. So a lot of people call those kinds of images ledger book images. But she has beaded them onto this Japanese kimono. And it was to honor a friend's daughter who was of Native and Japanese heritage.
Yeah. The third section of the show is titled Activators. And we mentioned Virgil Ortiz earlier as sort of being sort of a groundbreaker with his work with Donna Karan. Here you see a very different sort of Virgil Ortiz, right?
Virgil Ortiz is an incredibly versatile artist. He comes from a family of potters. And his career started in ceramics, but he has branched out into fashion and design and clothing, and is actually now doing glass as well.
Wow. Uh-huh. And the piece in the third section seems like it's more of a political piece.
He does a lot of political pieces. So on this piece, he's got an image of a Native person, but also some dates, including 1680, which was the date of the Pueblo Revolt. Which was a military action of Native people against Spanish invaders.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
So it's a very contemporary piece. It's a silk scarf, very bold design in black, yellow, white, and purple. But he's also speaking to this history and his heritage as a Pueblo person, still living in New Mexico.
And this is, you mentioned T-shirts. This is the section where you see a number of T-shirts. I believe it's a Jared Yazzie. Who is a Dine? He has a T-shirt that says "Native Americans discovered Columbus."
Yes,
love and kisses.
That was a very popular T-shirt, particularly last week, in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day.
Right. Exactly. And then another really interesting one. This is by Dustin Martin, who again is also a Dine, and he's taken a traditional image by Magritte, the famous "This is not a pipe," which is a picture of a pipe, and said, "This is not a pipe." And he's "Ceci n'est pas un conciliateur," which means this is not a peacemaker. And it's a picture of a Colt revolver.
Of a Colt 45 revolver, which was known as a peacemaker. And yeah. And he's making, again, a multi-layered statement, not only art historical and this reference to Magritte, as you mentioned, but also the irony of any weapon of destruction being called a peacemaker.
Now, there are a number of designers from Oklahoma that are in this show. I'm looking at Maya Stewart, who is a Chickasaw Creek Choctaw. I know there's some Osage designers, a number of Chickasaws, a number of Cherokee. So there are a lot of local people, at least with local ties, in this show.
And Kiowa as well. So yes, yeah. There are, I believe, 10 artists and designers who either live in Oklahoma or have Oklahoma roots.
Yeah. I'm looking at now a beautiful bag by Maya Stewart. What can you tell us about this?
Very contemporary and abstract design, beautiful black bag that's really sculptural as well, not unlike the jewelry that I was mentioning before. It's not your everyday purse that you'd go shopping at resource with. This is really haute couture for going out on the town in the evening.
Yeah. This section also features things like Marcus Ammerman, who is a Choctaw, and he's taking the Lone Ranger and appropriating that into a traditional beaded bracelet, again, making a very much a political statement.
He is. He's, again, using these glass beads that have become traditional in Native art, but using these pop culture icons of the Lone Ranger and Tonto, so a Native and a non-Native character, and beading them in a very pop art style. In fact, Philbrook has two bracelets by him that are also the Lone Ranger and Tonto that are currently on exhibit at Philbrook downtown.
Yeah. Now, also you're going to see a range of objects. I'm looking now at a couple of skateboard decks done by Rico Lanat Aworl, who's a Tinglet in Athabascan. And again, using very traditional sort of the eagle imagery of the Northwest, but on a skateboard.
But on a skateboard. So you see a lot of this mixing of old and new, of traditional and contemporary. And the two decks that you mentioned that Rico designed, one is eagle and one is raven. So the Tlingit, like many Northwest Coast people, their society is divided in half. There are eagles and there are ravens. And you have to have both for society to be whole. So created that design to illustrate that.
My guest today is Christina Burke, the curator of Native American and non-Western art at Philbrook Museum. As Philbrook presents a very different show for them, and it's a contemporary fashion, but it's Native fashion now, which will be on display at the museum through January 8th. A lot of Oklahoma artists and artists with Oklahoma ties represented in the show, and it's in four sections, and the last section is provocateurs, which get some really crazy looking design pieces and some really incredibly beautiful ones. I'm looking now at a Chickasaw artist, Kristen Dorsey, and she's using what traditionally was a very traditional item. We assume it's more of a, I don't know how often it was actually worn, but it was a staple of like American Westerns, the breastplate. Mm. And she's created this jewelry breastplate, which is utterly stunning. It is just stunning. There's no other word for it. Sterling silver, copper, brass, looks like a stone or two in it as well.
And the leather is, if I remember correctly, it's not shark skin, but it's...
It's a stingray leather.
Stingray leather. So a very non-traditional material, but gives a great texture and contrast to the polished silver. And then you get this matte black stingray leather with this wonderful texture to it. So she's really playing on the materiality of the elements that she's using to put together into this great ensemble of the breastplate and the ring.
Yeah. And another sort of combination piece is the Margaret Roach Wheeler's well, it's really all, what you could call it is an ensemble, because there's a headpiece as well as a, looks like a shawl of some sort or dress. Is it a dress or a shawl?
It's more like a cape, I would say.
Cape.
So yes, the owl, the messenger. And Margaret Roach Wheeler, a fantastic artist from here in Oklahoma, and she hand weaves all of her pieces and then creates these wonderful ensembles like the messenger in the exhibition.
You're seeing also things like from the Northwest, Tommy Joseph, who was a Tinglet, again, using traditional sort of things we expect to see on a totem pole or something like that, on a suit.
Yeah, that same kind of iconography that you'd see in three dimensions on a totem pole or masks, and here we see in two dimensions on a man's suit.
Yeah. And then some interesting use of materials, Pilar Aguayo, looks like she is using, well, it's vinyl. It's a vinyl dress.
Exactly. Very bold vinyl dress in red and black with these wonderful abstract elements that from the Pueblo of the Southwest, that the kind of elements you often see either woven into textiles or painted onto pottery. And here she's expressed them in vinyl.
And that's something that you see throughout the show. A lot of sort of design that you expect to see in one medium, you're seeing in a very different medium.
And a great example of that in the provocateurs section is the collaboration between Wendy Redstar, who's Crow from Montana, and Terrence Houle. And Wendy has done this fabulous traditional dress in black vinyl. And it is, and behind it are two vinyl buffaloes that Terrence Houle designed. But when you see this traditional imagery in all black, and it's the piece is talking about natural resources on native lands, both the buffalo on top of the land and oil from underneath the land. The dress and the buffalo both have these wonderful drips of black vinyl, illustrating that oil from the land.
It's interesting that this is a three-year-old piece, but it could be talking about something that happened this week in North Dakota.
It's still very relevant and very important.
Yeah. Well, what's been the takeaway from visitors so far to the exhibit who are seeing this? Because really, a lot of this, I mean, it's just absolutely first-rate design.
People have been very excited about this exhibition. It's unexpected, which I always love, that reaction to my exhibitions of Native art. You know, the installation and layout was a real challenge for us because our gallery space is about 1,000 square feet smaller than the two other museums. And we had to custom build in-house a series of platforms and runways to accommodate all these mannequins. Doing a fashion exhibition is a lot different than hanging paintings on a wall. But our creative team, Badri Verdusco, George Brooks, and the whole team at Philbrook came up with this wonderful design, but it's very unexpected, and people seem really excited about the show.
Yeah. Are you doing any special programming in conjunction with the show?
We have a number of programs throughout the run of the show, including some of the designers. Jared Yazzie, for instance, will join us for our print action the third Thursday in December. We also have Native scholar Dr. Jessica Metcalf will be joining us for a discussion about contemporary Native fashion and appropriation. So we've got talks, we've got demos, we've got gallery talks, all kinds of programs throughout the run of the show through January 8th.
All right, and you can learn more at philbrook.org, I'm sure. Christina Burke, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Christina Burke is Philbrook Museum's curator of Native American and non-Western art. Native Fashion Now is on display through January 8th at the main museum at Villa Philbrook. Burke is also curating First Person. Lakota artists Stephen Standing Bear and Amos Badheart Bull were both present at the Battle of Little Bighorn back in 1876 between General Custer and the 7th Cavalry and Lakota and Cheyenne warriors. Their pictographs, drawn on cloth and paper, provide a first-person account of this seminal event in both American Indian and American history. First Person is on display through December 31st at Philbrook downtown. Information on Native Fashion Now and First Person is available at philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.